Israel presents.
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. This one for Rosh Hashanah 5768. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky. I don't know when you'll be listening to this show, perhaps right before Rosh Hashanah, perhaps right after Rosh Hashanah. And my hope is that if you're Jewish, you will be observing Rosh Hashanah properly on Shabbat and not listen to it during the three-day Chag. If you are non-Jewish and listening to this show, I guess I wish you an enjoyable and educational experience. I hope that didn't sound too awkward, but I mean it. If there were non-kosher food and I were serving it to a non-Jew, I would be happy to say B'tei Avon, Bon Appetit. And if I saw a fellow Jew eating non-kosher, even if that's his particular choice of lifestyle, which under the free will doctrine he's entitled to do, but not without consequences, I certainly would not feel comfortable about it, and I certainly wouldn't wish him a good appetite. This is pretty much the same. You've got a chance to listen to it before Rosh Hashanah, and after Rosh Hashanah, before the Yom Kippur show goes up in Mir Tzashem, and we'll do the best we can at explaining certain things that are coming up. I assume most of you recognize the opener of this show. It was what's known as a tashrat, a tekiah, shivarim teruah tekiah, some of the shofar blasts, and maybe that will be our first topic. We'll talk a lot about shofar, and we'll see what else we get to talk about on this Rosh Hashanah show. But first, as we open all shows, Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed. This time in particular, it is, let's say, extra appropriate, since for the 10 days from Rosh Hashanah through Yom Kippur, we meaning there is a standard custom to recite Psalm 130 in the middle of the morning service, specifically right after Yishtabach and before Baruch Hu, before the Brachot of Kriyat Shema. The Aron Kodesh, the Holy Ark, is opened, and the Chazan, the reader, the cantor, and the congregation responsively recite the 8 psukim, the 8 verses of Psalm 130. I hesitated when I said we have the custom, because personally I follow what is known as Minhag Yerushalayim, Jerusalem custom, which are based on the teachings of the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, and his opinion was not to say that extra Tehillim in that place. It's an interruption in the davening and a later introduction, which he was opposed to, and therefore those who follow the Gra shuls, who follow the Gra communities, who follow Minhag Yerushalayim, will not be saying Shir HaMa'alot at that point. But I would say the overwhelming majority of Jews who do pray in synagogue will be saying Psalm 130 on Rosh Hashanah, the 10 days of penitence, which is really only 7 days in between, one of which is Shabbat, and Yom Kippur. Shir HaMa'alot Mima'amakim Karaticha Adonai. Adonai Shimavakoli Tihiena Oznecha Kashuvot Lekol Tachanunai. Imavonot Tishmor Yah Adonai Miya Amod Ki Imacha Hasalicha Lama'an Tivare. Kivi Ti Adonai Kivata Nafshi Velidvoroho Cholti. Nafshi Ladonai Mi Shomerim Laboker Shomerim Laboker. Yachel Yisrael El Adonai Ki Im Adonai HaChesed V'Harbe Imo Fedut V'Hu Yifde Et Yisrael Mikol Avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanatunim batzara uvashivya haomedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha hamakom yirachem aleihem viyotziyem mitzara lirvacha umeafela laora umishibud lugu'ula hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar amen. I think I've mentioned before an album by Mordechai Ben David. It's old, but it's great, and especially for the month of Elul and the Aseret Yemei Teshuvah. It has a lot of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur kind of stuff in it. And the song that I would like to play now is said as part of the tefillah, as part of the davening, the prayer, right after the communal shofar blowing, not the first set, which I'll describe later, but when the shofar is blown in the repetition of the Amidah, each minor set of 10 blasts of the shofar are followed by the congregation and the chazan saying, Hayom Harat Olam, today the world was created. It really refers to the sixth day of creation, the day that man was created and woman, actually together at first and then separated and reunited, but that's another story. Hayom Ya'amid Bamishpat, today all creations of God stand in judgment before Him. Im Kivanim Im Ka'avadim. It could be as children of a father. It could be as slaves or servants of a master. Im Kivanim, we say, if you will approach us, God, you will react to us, let's say, as we are your children, then Rachmenu Kerachim Avalbanim, have mercy on us like a father has on his children. V'im Ka'avadim, and if you relate to us as your servants, your slaves, or your royal subjects, then Einenu Lecha Tluyot, we look to you without necessarily that petition of rachamim, of mercy, ad shetechanenu v'totzi chaor mishpatenu ayom kadosh. We still look for a kindness from you in your judgment. That's followed by another little passage, areshet sifatenu ye'erav lifanecha, may our prayers of our lips be pleasing before you, kel ram v'nisa, the lofty and high God. Mevin uma'azin mabit umakshiv l'kol tekiyotenu, the one who understands and hears and sees and pays attention to our shofar sounds. Utekabel berachamim uvratzon, and please accept with mercy and desire, Seder Malchiotenu, or Seder Zichronotenu, or Seder Shofrotenu, which are the names of the three groups of verses from Tanakh, which are part of the tefillah, part of the prayer, and which are associated with the mini set of shofar blasts. That might have been too long an introduction before we really get into the topic, but I want you to hear this Mordechai Ben David song first, and notice also how it starts out very somber and solemn, and then bursts into a more joyous tune, and that's very much significant to the theme of the day. I'll talk about it after you listen to the song.
Hayoim harasoilom, hayoim hayoim yamid bamishpot kol yitzurei yehovoilomim, hayoim harasoilom, Hayoim haravas oilom Hayoim, hayoim Yamit bamishpon Kol yitzurei yavav oilomim Im kibonim Im kavodim Im kibonim Rachmeinu kerachem kerachem aval bonim im kibonim im kavodim im kibonim rachmeinu kerachem kerachem aval bonim
Rachamim v'rotzoin sein desein dezichroin oisein Kabel v'rachamim v'rachamim v'rotzoin sein desein dezichroin oisein Harech sechosein yerav lefonecho yerav lefonecho Harech sechosein yerav lefonecho keil ram v'niyiso Mevin umazin mahavit umakshiv lekoi lekoi Tekiyo, 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 Seheinu. Kavet v'rachamim, v'rachamim, v'rotzoin, sein, deseide, malchu yoseinu. Kavet v'rachamim, v'rachamim, v'rotzoin, sein, deseide, shoyfro yoseinu.
Mordechai ben David, serious and joyous. And that is a very important summary of what Rosh Hashanah should be. I grew up in a community in Brooklyn, and the style of the prayer on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur was straight, serious, and solemn. The idea of singing a toe-tapping nigun to any part of the prayer was just unheard of in that particular setting. There are other communities, very much in the Hasidic mold, that have a lot of toe-tapping singing. And I have grown to appreciate the services that contain both, because the day demands and deserves both feelings. And you could even see it in the shofar blowing. But let's start from the beginning, and hopefully we'll get to that same point again from the perspective of shofar. Let's give a quick rundown here. In the Torah, specifically in the book of Bamidbar, chapter 29, it says there that in the seventh month, on the first day of the month, it shall be a holy day, a Yom Tov, we would call it. Kol Melechet Avodah lo ta'asu, no manner of what's called Melechet Avodah, which is a modified, slightly smaller list of forbidden categories of activities compared with Shabbat. And the verse ends for us the important phrase, Yom Teruah Yihyeh Lachem. You shall have a Teruah day. Nice. It's Rosh Hashanah, even though the Torah doesn't call it that. Have a Teruah day. Question, what is a Teruah? At a certain part of the Talmud, we learn that a Teruah is a sound, a call. On what instrument? It doesn't say, but we know it's the shofar. And how do we know that it's the shofar? The Talmud teaches us, the oral tradition, the oral law, is that the sound called the Teruah, which we are to hear on Rosh Hashanah, is produced only with a shofar. The Talmud doesn't leave us hanging just with the oral law. It makes the connection for us, which we can't do on our own, and shows us in the Torah the definition of a Teruah, which we apply by oral law, Torah law, to Rosh Hashanah. In a different context in the Torah, in the book of Vayikra, Leviticus, we have there the command to count seven-year periods, 7 years, seven times, and it shall be in the course of these seven sevens, a total of 49 years. The 50th year is the Jubilee year, which does not apply in our time. It will be back in vogue sometime in the near future. One of the preconditions for it is a majority of the Jews of the world living in the land of Israel, and we're getting close to that. But the Torah tells us, V'ha'avarta shofar teruah b'chodesh hashvi'i. You shall blow the shofar that produces the Teruah in the seventh month, specifically on the 10th of the month, which is Yom Kippur, Ta'aviru Shofar B'chol Artzachem. The shofar is blown throughout the land. What we are taught by the oral law is the connection between Chodesh HaShvi'i, the seventh month, which is Tishrei, in both contexts of Rosh Hashanah and the Yom Kippur of the Jubilee year, Teruah from one to the other, and Shofar Teruah explaining the unwritten word in the Rosh Hashanah context, and we are taught in this manner that the Teruah day that we are to have on Rosh Hashanah is hearing the sound of the shofar. Okay, next step, what is a shofar? For this we turn again to the oral law, and we read a Mishnah in Masechet Rosh Hashanah that says, Kol ha-shofarot kisherin, all shofars are acceptable for Rosh Hashanah, chutz mishel para, except for the horn of a cow. A shofar is a hollowed out horn. I should be more specific than that. The horns of cows, they are not acceptable for shofar, but they are physically the same kind of structure. The horns of sheep, which are the preferred shofar of Rosh Hashanah. The horns of goat are acceptable. Mountain goats, antelopes, kudu, oryx, Adax, Ibex, and a whole variety of other kosher animals. We don't know of any non-kosher animal that has a horn that qualifies as a shofar. In order to qualify as a shofar, you need an inside and an outside. Bony material on the inside surrounded by another kind of material, a protein, keratin, whatever, which makes up the outside of the horn, let's say, of a sheep. And after the horn is removed from the sheep's head, the insides are removed. They come out fairly easy after the shofar is heated in water. And then it's polished and a mouth hole is drilled on the solid part of the horn, which wouldn't allow the passage of air, and that produces a shofar. That was just a quick version of what a shofar is. And bottom line, ram's horn is by far the preferred shofar for Rosh Hashanah. All the various others, including the one that is known as the Yemenite shofar, that very, very long, spiraling horn of the great kudu, which is a large African antelope, is a kosher shofar. But in Ashkenazi communities, the ram's horn is the choice for the shofar of Rosh Hashanah. Okay, we have the Torah's command to hear the sound of the shofar. We have the horn to use to produce the sound of the shofar. The question is, what sound is a teruah that the Torah wants us to hear? Our sages were in a bit of a quandary about that, and they used various sources to indicate that the teruah is some type of wailing, sobbing, or crying, which could either be a short staccato type of sounds, like that, or more of a mournful, wailing, sighing. And those sounds became known as the shvarim in the second case and the teruah in the first case. I'm leaving out some of the detail, believe me, but it's still going to get more complicated, so just let this digest and we'll be back shortly with more on the shofar and Rosh Hashanah. You are listening to Torah Tidbits Audio for Rosh Hashanah 5768. I want to play another song also from that Mordechai Ben David album. This one also has a somber, serious part, followed by a very lively, peppy part, which again, I believe, conveys the message of Rosh Hashanah, which I hope to get to in respect to the shofar. There's a lot more that I want to share with you, and I don't think I'll have time to do it, but we'll do the best we can. In the meantime, Berosh Hashanah Yikatevun.
Kamo Yavron, Kamo Yibureim, נחיה ומי ימות. מי עושר ומי עוני, מי שופל ומי ירום.
תשובה, תפילה, צדקה, מעביר נס לא יחזר.
אין קצבה, אין קצבה
That song was about the emotional side of Rosh Hashanah, that in Rosh Hashanah we are inscribed in the books in heaven, and on Yom Kippur sealed, hopefully into the Book of Life, but there are other books open before God as well, according to our tradition. And tefillah, teshuvah, tzedakah, prayer and repentance and charity and acts of kindness are those things which combine to remove evil decrees from us. And I feel a little guilty now spending so much time on shofar, but I'm going to spend a little bit more, and hopefully we'll put together the emotion with the shofar, because it is a very emotional kind of mitzvah. Anyway, I was saying I'll try to cut to the chase, or cut to the quick, as they say. What comes out of what I had said earlier is we have three sounds, really two sounds, and the combination of the two. The shvarim by itself, the truah by itself, the shvarim-truah combination, which are the three main candidates to be the definition of what the Torah requires us to hear. Furthermore, we are commanded to hear a plain, long monotone, which we call tekiah, which is also known as a peshuta, before and after each sound of the truah. Those all combine to tekiah shvarim truah tekiah, three times, that's a tradition, tekiah shvarim tekiah, three times, tekiah teruah tekiah, three times. And then the question is, do we do all 30 of those blasts, which is how they count out, at the same time? Yes, we do. But then we also do another 10, 10, and 10 with the special sections of the Musaf Amidah. Some people do it in the silent Amidah and in the repetition. Others do it only in the repetition. There's a total of 100 shofar blasts. I realize now that there's much, much too much to cover with all the other things that I want to share with you. So let's cut it at that, except to say the following. The tekiah sound, the long blast, monotone, pshuta, is a happy sound. It's associated with the coronation of God as king of the world, of the universe, and we, his loyal subjects, proclaim him as king on the date of his coronation, which is the day that he had subjects. In other words, the argument goes, God created the world in 6 days. On the sixth day, he created human beings who were to be his subjects. Therefore, he became king on that day. Therefore, every year on Rosh Hashanah is the anniversary of the coronation of the king, for which we blow the proud, happy blasts of the shofar. And then we have the broken sounds, the sounds that are like crying, sobbing, wailing. And they are surrounded by a tekiah on one side and a tekiah on the other side, each of them. That package sort of has the bookends of the happy, proud sound sandwiching in, pardon my mix of metaphors, sandwiching between them the sadder sounds, the broken sounds, the one that simulates stimulates, that's not the right word, but puts us in the mode of a broken heart open to repentance. And yet it's not unlimited because it begins with a tekiah and ends with a tekiah, each one of these teruah sounds. Now, prayer is a sophisticated verbal, with the heart behind it, verbal expression of many different things before God. Shofar is the primitive, primeval sound that is meant to penetrate deeper than even the sophisticated words of prayer, right to the heart and soul of the person. And on Rosh Hashanah, we make a blend of the two by actually interweaving prayer with shofar blowing. They don't really stand apart from each other. If a person is homebound and can't get to the synagogue on Rosh Hashanah, then someone will come to his house and blow shofar for him. And then it's not in the context of prayer, it's just a straight blowing of the shofar. And that's what we do. But in the context of the real place where the Rosh Hashanah service is observed, it is a blend better, an interweaving of the primitive sounds of the shofar and the sophisticated sounds of prayer. Prayer covers a lot of territory, says a lot of things, has very many biblical quotes in it as well. And yet there's a point at which words escape us, and there's the shofar, which can't escape, because it cuts through all language barriers and all intellectual boundaries, and it goes right to the core of every person. And that's what it's meant to do. It is a wake-up call to repent, a wake-up call to straighten out one's life, a wake-up call to improve oneself. And that's a key word, because in Hebrew, the word to improve is lishaper, to undergo a shipur. Shipur and shofar come from the same root. And therefore, the shofar is the symbol that calls the individual to become a better person. And that means in his relationship with God, and it means in his relationship with other people. And that is part of the message, an important part of the message of Rosh Hashanah, Shippur, improvement. Does not mean becoming righteous individuals overnight. It means becoming better today than we were yesterday, and will be better tomorrow than we were today. And that improvement process is signaled by a lot of prayer, by a lot of introspection, and by the sound of the shofar. The idea of God's kingship being a major theme on Rosh Hashanah shows up in our prayers, shows up in the shofar blowing, and this next song, also by Mordechai Ben David, is an example of one of the piyutim, the liturgical poetry, which is heavily sprinkled throughout the Rosh Hashanah davening. And this one focuses on Melech Elyon, the exalted king, namely God.
Adir bamorim, adir bamorim, ay met yaday torim,
Mentioned earlier that the horn of a cow is not acceptable as a shofar, and the preferred horn is the ram's horn. One of the reasons given for this is, which would you rather have as a symbol and an object with which you perform this precious mitzvah of shofar with? That which reminds us of the sin of the golden calf, namely the horn of the cow in whose family the calf is, or the horn of a ram, which is associated with the binding of Isaac, Akedat Yitzchak, which serves as an inspiration and a reminder to us, and in a way to God as well. We appear before God on Judgment Day, which is another name for Rosh Hashanah, Yom HaDin. And we say to him, we are not standing alone as individuals asking you to judge us for life. We are standing here as part of Klal Yisrael, part of the Jewish people. And we ask you to take into account our ancestors, because we inherited their commitment to you. Prime example of commitment, dedication, and devotion to God is when God told Abraham, to take his only son, Yitzchak, and offer him on an altar on Har HaMoriah, which our tradition says was the Temple Mount, is the Temple Mount, that event shows up on Rosh Hashanah in the form of the ram's horn shofar, in the Torah reading of Rosh Hashanah, and periodically throughout the prayers, because we are bringing across the point, I stand before you, God, as a member of the Jewish people. Look at what the Jewish people are. Don't necessarily look at me just by myself. And that's the role of the ram's horn, and that's why we shun the cow's horn. And when I say cow, I mean all members of the cow family. Rosh Hashanah is observed as 2 days, even in Israel. I say it like that because the other holidays that are each observed as 2 days outside of Israel are observed as only a single day here. Rosh Hashanah is the exception, and there are reasons for it, mostly having to do with the fact that it's at the very beginning of the Jewish month rather than in the middle like Pesach and Sukkot and Shavuot, which is towards the beginning. Because these 2 days coming up of Rosh Hashanah, Thursday and Friday, meaning Wednesday night, Thursday and Friday, are immediately followed by Friday night and Shabbat, we have a 3-day Yom Tov, as it's known. And for various technical reasons about the difficulty or inability from a halachic point of view of cooking for this Shabbat, we have a process, a procedure known as Eruv Tavshilin. I'm not going to explain it now, but I'm just serving as a reminder that this year we must execute an Eruv Tavshilin in order to permit preparation of food on Friday in the permitted manner of cooking on Yom Tov for the Shabbat. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to do that. It's a very long and difficult day, a very serious day, as I keep saying, with a festive element to it. That festive element needs to emerge, although it is quite suppressed by the solemnity of the day. And I guess what I keep saying in different ways is that this is part of Jewish life. It's much simpler to have a day where you say, eat, drink, and be merry, and have a good time, and dance, and sing, and celebrate. A day like Purim, perhaps. And we can handle the serious, sober kind of day, of a fast day, which does not call for joy. It calls for sadness and seriousness. But the Rosh Hashanah combination is a very tricky one to get. One should not get depressed on Rosh Hashanah. One should feel confident. Not only, let's put it like this, one should not only be in fear and trepidation of judgment, but should feel confident that his judgment will be successful. It isn't always for everybody, obviously, but this is a certain confidence that we need to have along with our fervent Slichot prayers, penitential prayers, not on Rosh Hashanah itself, but on Rosh Hashanah, the prayers that basically say, God, we are thrilled and delighted to be part of your nation. Please accept us as such, and don't look too much at ourselves as individuals, because without the protection of our Jewish heritage, and without the credentials as part of the Jewish nation, as I said before, we might not really be able to handle the judgment that well. It is a day of God's kingship, a day of remembrance, a day of shofar. The shofar is a reminder of many things in addition to the things that I mentioned. It reminds us of the receiving of the Torah at Sinai, and as such we relive that experience as well. It reminds us of the ingathering of the exiles and of the final judgment day and of the coming of the Mashiach and of Tchiyat HaMeitim and a whole bunch of other things as well. With only enough time to say Shana Tova, Ketivah V'Chatima Tova, and Shabbat Shalom, that Shabbat which we didn't get a chance to talk about, is Shabbat Shuva, and hopefully we'll have a show for Yom Kippur, which will be able to give us a good focus on that day. L'Hishtameah.